Will the House come to order? Will the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? The clerk tally the board.
27 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Representative Clarkson.
Speaker, Representatives Jenkins, Taylor, Fuller, Boucher, and Herman are excused from the call of the House today. Representative Martin is excused from noon on, Representative Phillips from 4:30 p.m. on, and Representatives Navarre, Davis, Kopanen, Hanley, Pierce, and Collins upon adjournment.
Our chaplain today is Vicar Corky Spittler from the Resurrection Lutheran Church. Would the members please rise for the invocation?
Let us pray. We give you thanks, O Lord, for the privilege to live in so special a place as Alaska, but we confess to you that there are times when her sheer size and complexity are far beyond our scope of understanding. Because this is so, we ask for your help as we struggle to govern so vast a state. Continue to open our eyes to the needs of all Alaskans, and then guide us with your wisdom to best meet these needs. Help us to find new and creative ways to carry these tasks out, especially now when the resources available to do these things becomes ever smaller. And above all, O God, keep our hearts that we would always be people of great compassion. Amen.
Would the second graders from the Capital Elementary School please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you very much. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread in the journal.
Are there any objection as to having the prayer spread up on the journal? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk at this time please certify the journal for the 38th and 39th legislative day?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journals with the following correction to the 38th day. On page 2176 under reports of standing committees, delete the first paragraph and insert. A zero fiscal note was received from the Resources Committee for House Bill number 407 relating to the use of game as bait. With this correction, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 38th and 39th days in House Supplement number 88.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 38th day as corrected and the 39th day in House Supplement number 88 be approved as certified and corrected.
Are there any objection as to the correctness of the journal and the supplement? Hearing no objection, the journal and supplement stand approved. Do we have any guests for introduction at this time? Representative Binkley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my distinct pleasure to introduce to this body two second grade classes from Capital School and also their teachers, Jan Rice and Joyce Wright. I might also mention, Mr. Speaker, that three of the members of these two second grade classes are relatives of members of this body. I'd like to maybe point out the daughter of Representative Mike Miller from North Pole, Tiffany Miller, and also the nephew of Representative Kay Wallace from Fort Yukon, Jacob Savage, and also my son, Ryan Binkley. And maybe we could have them all stand, and we'll give them another round of applause. And I think they did an excellent job on that, leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance, and I thank you for that.
Representative Gohl.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Today I have the real pleasure of introducing two people who, among three, are the closest people to me, and those two who have been closest to me and my best friends all my life, my parents, Elsie and Al Gall, and Gallery B.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Miller.
In Gallery B, we have three representatives from the business professional women who have been meeting here in Juneau, and these people are from Juneau: Irene Roberts Erickson, Lou Riddle, and Janice Holz, who is president of the Juneau BPW.
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Also visiting us today from the Business and Professional Women's Club is Mrs. Carolyn Gardner. She's second vice president of the State Alaska BPW and president of the North to the Future BPW in Anchorage.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery B, please join me in welcoming a constituent of Representative Boucher's and mine. She's from Anchorage, and she's the first woman governor of the Yukon-Alaska Council of Toastmasters, Norma Chmielowski.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Also from Fairbanks today, down with the Business and Professional Women's Group, we have the president of the Alaska Federation of Business and Professional Women, Linda Brecken. Also from Fairbanks, we have the first vice president of the statewide organization, Madeline McKinney, and the state secretary, Melanie Murata.
Representative Taylor.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. It gives me pleasure to introduce to the body a member of the Business and Professional Women's Club of Petersburg, which is the organization to which I belong in Petersburg. Another representative of this body also happens to belong to that organization from the Anchorage area, and I believe we are the only two men in this body, at least, who belong to it, and among a very few in the state, and I'd like to encourage other men to join because it's a fine organization. But from the Petersburg area, I have with me today, and I'm going to introduce one of these ladies, and Representative Sun will introduce the other, Frances Hubbard.
Representative Sund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Also from the Petersburg Business and Professional Women, there are two members here with us, one who is a good writer if you ever want to catch up on what's going on in fish and game news, Ms. Marilyn George, and also Arlene Pence in Gallery B.
Any further guests for introduction? In Gallery B, there's someone from Sitka, from BPW. I understand she's the state president-elect. Help me welcome Candy Rutledge. Any further guests for introduction? Messages from the governor.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Dear Representative Grusendorf, I have signed the following bill and am transmitting the engrossed and enrolled copies to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. Committee Substitute for House Bill No. 30, Finance, effective date, amended Senate, relating to payment for purchases by the state and providing for an effective date, Chapter No. 2. This is a long letter and it has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk. Dear Representative Grusendorf, the names set down for legislative confirmation as of this date are correct except for one change. Mr. Douglas Pope, appointee to the Guide Licensing and Control Board, has submitted his resignation effective immediately. Please remove Mr. Pope's name from the confirmation list submitted to you on February 12, 1986. I have signed the following resolution and bills and am transmitting the engrossed and enrolled copies to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution No. 58, Hess, urging the United States Department of Health and Human Services to ease the restrictions on the granting of Medicaid 1915C waivers, Legislative Resolve No. 29. Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution No. 59, Hess, urging the United States Congress to pass an amended form of H.R. 1279, 99th Congress, the AFDC Error Reduction and Quality Control Act, or substantially similar legislation, Legislative Resolve No. 31. House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 28, Hess, relating to training state employees and certain employees of the districts of the state public school system on the recognition and reporting of child abuse and neglect, Chapter No. 1. Signed sincerely, Bill Sheffield, Governor. I have no further messages from the Governor, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, with your permission, could I divert for a moment? I'm going to have two pieces of documents to pass out to members that relate to a bill that's on the House today. I don't have my rubber stamp name on them, so I thought I would announce at this time, in case members are wondering where it came from, that they will be coming from me. And with your permission, I'd like to ask for an at-ease so I can take these up to the Sergeant at Arms.
House, please stand at ease.
Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, I believe we've completed all the messages from the governor. That brings us down to messages from the Senate. Do we have any messages from the Senate?
Mr. Speaker, the Senate accepts the invitations to meet in joint session March 7th, Friday at 10 a.m. to hear an address by the Honorable Ted Stevens, U.S. Senator, and on March 27th, Thursday at 10 a.m. to hear the judiciary address by the Honorable J.A. Rabinowitz, Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court. The Senate approved the following citations, and they are transmitted for consideration. Honoring Edward A. Olson by Senators Fahrenkamp and Bennett, Representatives Davis and Kopanen. Honoring Heidelberg Boys Single-Age State Champion Basketball Team by Senator Eliason and Representative Gall. And the Senate also approved the following citations, and they are transmitted to enrolling. Honoring the Angu girls basketball team and honoring Janice Olson. And the Senate also approved the citation in memoriam Joe Hong by Senators Vic Fisher, Ziegler, Eliason, and Sturgiluski, and sent to enrolling, honoring Wrangell's Tent City Festival and honoring six lifetime traditional counselors.
Those citations that have been sent over for our consideration will be referred to rules for calendaring.
The Senate has passed the following, and they are transmitted for consideration. Committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution Number 31, State Affairs, by the State Affairs Committee. Invitation to President Reagan and General Secretary Gorbachev to meet in Alaska in 1986.
One standing committee, State Affairs.
Senate Bill Number 386, amended by the Rules Committee. An act making supplemental appropriations for session expenses of the legislature and providing for an effective date.
The Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any other communications to come before this body?
No, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to reports of standing committees.
The Judiciary Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the following individuals who have been nominated for the positions noted below and recommends confirmation. For the Public Defender for the State of Alaska, Dana Anderson Fabey. Judicial Counsel, Hilbert Henriksen. Commission on Judicial Conduct, Georgiana Lincoln, Charles Wheeler. Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar, Jan Ackerman and Adonia Harrison. The reports were signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, and concurred in by Sand, Clarkson, Phillips, Grunberg, Taylor, and Pettijohn. The Committee on State Affairs has House Bill 382 relating to accelerated normal retirement for state employees in the public employees retirement system under consideration and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 382, State Affairs, with a new title, recommends due pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Hurley, Chairman, signing due pass, Hurley, M.M. Miller, and Navarre. Jenkins has no recommendation. House Bill 382 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 465, Fiscal Matters Involving the State and Persons Doing Business in the Republic of South Africa, and reports it back with individual recommendations and attaches fiscal notes. The report was signed by Hurley, Chairman, signing due pass, Hurley, and M.M. Miller, having no recommendation, Jenkins and Cato. House Bill 465 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee has considered House Bill 473, providing alcohol to persons under 21 years of age, and recommends it due pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by the co-chairs, Kopanen and Grunberg, and signing due pass, Grunberg, Kopanen, Hanley, Taylor, Thompson, and Pettijohn. House Bill 473 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 541, Absentee Voting by Personal Representative, and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 541, State Affairs, with the same title, and reports back due pass. The report was signed by Hurley, Chairman, signing due pass, Hurley, Cato, and M.M. Miller, having no recommendation, Navarre and Jenkins. House Bill 541 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
The House Special Committee on Oil and Gas has had House Bill 445, requiring in-state refiners to submit and the Department of Commerce and Economic Development to collect information concerning the purchase and sale price of royalty oil and gas and fuel products by in-state refiners under consideration and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 445, Oil and Gas, with a new title, reports it back without recommendation and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Davis, Chairman, signing due pass, Pignalberry, having no recommendation, Maru, Davis, Cotton, Porchot, and Sund. Szymanski signed, don't pass, more, I think it's bureaucratic paper. House Bill 445 has a further referral to the Resources Committee. I have no further special committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring Edward A. Mertes by Representatives M.W. Miller, Ringstead, Frank, Fuller, and Binkley.
That citation will be referred to rules for calendaring.
I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
House Bill 692 by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to the issuance, renewal, transfer of ownership, and relocation of liquor licenses and providing for an effective date.
Three standing committees, State Affairs, Judiciary, and Finance.
House Bill 693 with a governor's letter and a fiscal note by the Rules Committee by request of the governor, an act establishing the Alaska Research Policy.
State Affairs, Health, Education, and Social Services, and the Finance Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to the consideration of the daily calendar. Will the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Joint Resolution Number 60 by M.M. Miller, Kopanen, Martin, Duncan, Porcheau, Clarkson, Fuller, Grunberg, Hurley, and Wallace, relating to the International Year of Peace. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Joint Resolution 60 and recommends due pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Hurley, Chairman, signing due pass, Hurley, Navarre, M.M. Miller, Collins, Cato, and Boucher. Jenkins has no recommendation. I have one amendment on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Resolution is before us in second reading, and we have one amendment. Would the clerk please make reference to that amendment?
Amendment number one by Pettijohn, and it's page 1, line 18, and it has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk.
Representative Pettijohn.
I move the amendment, Mr. Speaker.
Hearing objections, proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This resolution is pretty difficult to be against a resolution in favor of peace. However, I feel that the resolution is flawed and the amendment corrects the flaw. The resolution seems to take a posture of neutrality between the two superpowers. And I think we ought to recognize in this resolution that one of the principal reasons that we don't have peace around the world is because we have a totalitarian dictatorship in the Soviet Union, which is attempting to export through subversive means its efforts at world hegemony. You can look around the world from Afghanistan to Angola, Kampuchea, El Salvador. You can look at their history from Hungary to Poland to Czechoslovakia. The problem in world peace, sir, Mr. Speaker, is not the United States. The principal problem is the Soviet Union, and I think we ought to recognize that fact. This resolution, as it's written, takes a posture which is popular in some academic circles of that, well, the United States and the Soviet Union are equivalent somehow. We're a world power, they're a world power. We have missiles, they have missiles. We have interests, they have interests. I think that's totally misguided. And I think if we're going to talk about peace, we ought to acknowledge what one of the serious problems in the area is by adopting this amendment. Thank you.
Any further discussion on amendment number one? Representative Miller.
Yeah, well, Mr. Speaker, I would certainly hope that we would not adopt the amendment. I don't think there's any doubt that probably everybody on this floor identifies the United States as the good guys and probably the Soviet Union as the bad guys. And in fact, I would say in that concept, we're probably right. But this is not a resolution which is trying to establish blame. This is a resolution which is attempting to state that the state of Alaska seeks peace among democratic countries, and it's absolutely imperative in the resolution that we're talking about democracy as one of the true ways to achieving true peace. And until the Soviet Union, for instance, is truly democratic, they will miss the mark. But this is a resolution that is neutral in the sense that I think worldwide, the people, the people who are working in the factories and on the streets and in the homes of the Soviet Union, I believe want peace just as honestly and greatly as we do. This is not a resolution that seeks to say we're clean and you're dirty. And I think the insertion of this amendment would have that effect. I don't think a resolution that throws down the gauntlet and says, we're clean, you're dirty, let's have peace, has much chance of establishing much peace. I just hope the members will vote no, Mr. Speaker.
Any further debate on amendment number one? Representative Gall.
Could we have a brief at ease, please?
Would the House please stand at ease?
Will the House come back to order? Before the at-ease, we had amendment number one before us, and that amendment is under debate. Representative Clarkson.
I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker. Before we have any votes here, I wanted the record to reflect that Representative Cato is ill today and therefore excused from the call.
Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to offer an amendment to amendment number one, and I don't know if you need this to be in writing, but I'm just going to take the words out. The amendment would delete the word seeking world hegemony and would make the word dictatorship plural. I don't know if you want that in writing or not.
Can the clerk make that correction? Our rules state that the clerk must have it in writing on her desk.
Okay.
Is there a major problem, Irene? Okay.
Is that okay?
Okay, it's all right with me.
She has it in writing before? Right. Very well. I would move and ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to amend amendment number one by making the word dictatorship plural, dictatorships, and then eliminating the three following words, seeking world hegemony. Ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? We have objections to the amendment to the amendment. Representative Maru.
Oh, I only wanted to make a friendly amendment to the amendment to the amendment, which is to also
delete
the word.
That's third degree.
Sir?
That is in the third degree. It would not. You may substitute for the whole amendment, but you may not have an amendment to the amendment to the amendment.
I withdraw my terms and suggest that the maker also delete the word A.
Well, we're getting into the areas of the violation of the rules, but I think we might be able to have a little bit of flexibility here. Representative Pettyjohn, you are now saying that you wanted to go a little bit further in your amendment to the amendment.
Well, it's really a clerical question. Did you just delete the word A before the word totalitarian, which is really clerical?
Okay, remember now the debate is on the amendment to the amendment. Representative Clarkson. Would the clerk please read that amendment?
Page 1, line 18, after racism, insert organized subversion by totalitarian dictatorships.
Are there objections maintained to the amendment to the amendment? Representative Miller.
I still object. We shouldn't be writing bills or joint resolutions on the floor of the House. When you say organized subversion by a totalitarian dictatorship, does that imply that we approve of the organized subversion by governments that are not totalitarian dictatorships? I mean, this is the sort of spur-of-the-moment thing that just leads to all sorts of silliness, and I just urge the members to defeat the amendment to the amendment and defeat the amendment.
Representative Ewling.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could the sponsor of the amendment please read it in context then on line 18 before the body?
Representative Pettyjohn.
Fourth whereas clause would read, whereas global peace is not possible where there is racism, organized subversion by totalitarian dictatorships, persecution of ethnic and religious minorities, and military aggression.
You're ready for the question. The question is, shall the amendment to the amendment be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk tally the board.
24 yeas, 11 nays.
The amendment to the amendment has been adopted. We have amendment number one amended before us. Is there any further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number one be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Representative Davis. From yes to no, does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
23 yeas, 12 nays.
Amendment number one has been adopted. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no further amendments, Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that HGR number 60, as amended by the House, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Are there any objection to the advancement from second to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read that resolution for the third time?
House Joint Resolution Number 60, amended by M.A. Miller, Copen, and Martin, et al., relating to the International Year of Peace.
Is there any debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall House Joint Resolution 60, amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
36 yeas, no nays.
House Joint Resolution 60 amended has passed the House. Representative Clarkson, the House please stand at ease. Would the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we had just completed the first item on today's calendar. Would the clerk please read the second item on today's calendar?
Senate Bill Number 81 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act relating to the definition of veteran for purposes of veterans' employment preference rights. The Committee on State Affairs has had Senate Bill 81 under consideration and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Hurley, Chairman. Concurring, Hurley, Navarre, Binkley, and Wallace. The Finance Committee has considered Senate Bill 81 and recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman. Concurring, Adams, Ringstad, Szymanski, Duncan, Larson, Porcheau, Euling, Rieger, Frank, and Cotton. I have one amendment on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
The bill is before us in second reading, and we have one amendment. Would the clerk please read that amendment?
Amendment number 1 by Hurley. Page 1, line 12, after discharged, insert, or has received a general discharge under honorable conditions.
Representative Hurley.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
I hear objections to amendment number 1. Hearing no objections, amendment number 1 has
been.
But I looked at you twice and didn't say we have objections. Representative Hurley, would you continue?
Mr. Speaker, since Senate Bill 81 was in State Affairs last session, we have changed the definition of veteran in several other pieces of legislation, and this is just to conform with those changes already adopted by the body in other parts of the law.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The major intent of the legislation, of course, is to conform to the federal date of a veteran. Of course, this date here had to do with the Vietnam War, extending it for veterans of that affair. This one here seemed to significantly change it, whether the state wants to have a different interpretation or not from what the federal is allowing. And we had to closely relate those two veteran programs as much as possible. And without the general discussion that the sponsor of the amendment gave is not meaningful to me as to why, just because we, maybe probably one or two of you in the State Affairs Committee might have thought of it, but it's not meaningful enough to me to support. General conditions might be a person found with AIDS and suddenly they discharge the individual under honorable conditions. It may be other reasons that you get discharged under general conditions, but I don't necessarily like it as broad as this is and approve it for all of our veteran programs without having a more specific idea of what we're allowing.
Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure I followed all of the arguments that the Minority Leader laid out, but what we're doing here is the bill would amend the state's Personnel Act, Chapter 25, that deals with the 5 points for the 5 points preference for the veteran or 10 points preference for the disabled veteran. And we weren't required to conform to the federal statutes under this situation. And as the State Affairs Chairman pointed out, we have amended the definition of veteran previously this session under, I think, home site preferences for veterans. So I think this would conform with that intent, and again, I don't believe we're under any requirement to follow a federal guideline on this definition.
Question. Any further debate on Amendment Number 1? Representative Martin.
Yes, I appreciate the gentleman from Eagle River's point of view. Then perhaps we should say in Section 21, if we change another chapter, under Chapter 25 also, instead of just 39.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall Amendment Number 1 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
33 yeas, 3 nays.
Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill 81, as amended by the House, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement from second to third reading? Hearing objections, Representative Pinalberry.
We have a brief recess, Mr. Speaker.
The House, please stand at ease. Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease was a motion before us to advance from second to third reading. There was objection. Are the objections maintained? Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, bill is before us in third reading. Would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Senate Bill Number 81, amended by the House by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act relating to the definition of veteran for purposes of veterans' employment preference rights.
Is there any debate? Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to refer back to the information, and maybe I misheard it, from the gentleman from Eagle River, and he said that under Chapter 25 that we have definition of veterans. Is that correct, sir? Or can I yield to ask for an answer, sir?
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, Title 39, Chapter 25, and Chapter 25 is the State Personnel Act, defines veteran, and that's where this, I'm not sure I understand the question, but that's where the definition of veteran is for the purposes of State Personnel Act, for the purposes of employment preference. I'm not, was that the question from the Minority Leader?
Representative Martin, would you restate your question?
He answered, and I appreciate that, although he doesn't know I got the message. A major concern now is that if we open that to this termination, does anyone have any idea of what our military people would feel how this opens up the whole chapter to how many more veterans? Is there a fiscal impact of new people under the general? The chairman of the State Affairs mentioned that they discussed it, and I'm surprised they didn't put it in there at that time as committee work. And why wait till now to put it on? As the gentleman from Juneau said, we shouldn't do committee work on the floor, so I'm wondering why they didn't put it in there previously.
Representative Hurley.
Mr. Speaker, as I pointed out, this bill was considered last session. And when I was looking at it this morning, I realized that we had made this change in a piece of legislation just a few days ago. We changed the definition of veteran and added this language. And I felt that it was correct, that I felt personally that this was a good addition, that we should be consistent. And that was the reason for bringing it up. I could have asked for it to be brought back to the State Affairs Committee to consider it again, but I felt that since we had taken this action, that this was the proper way to handle it.
Any further debate? Representative Pinalberry.
My packet indicates that there have been two previous fiscal notes on this bill, one for $1,700, I think it is, and one for $1,000. And obviously there was some, the bill is going to have some impact, but apparently as it's come out of the House Finance Committee, it has a zero fiscal note. I'm wondering what it is that we're not doing that the Senate or the other body had intended to do that was going to cost money. And then I also have a question for the committees that considered it on the House side as to whether or not we heard from the Department of Military Affairs and what their feelings are on the bill, and how many more people are going to be brought in under the change in definition than were previously admitted under the old definition.
Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the fiscal note, is House Finance has zeroed out the fiscal note because we felt that the advertisement of running a 2x4-inch display ad in newspapers can be absorbed by their FY87 budget, which will be taken into consideration then.
Representative Hurley.
The zero fiscal note from the Military and Veterans Affairs, and we did hear from them.
Question. You're ready for the question.
The question is, shall Senate Bill 81, amended House, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk tally the board.
36 yeas, no nays.
Senate Bill 81, amended House, has passed the House.
Representative Miller.
At ease.
House, please stand at ease. Will the House come back to order? We're still under the daily calendar, and we have some final action on some citations. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that all of the citations appearing on today's calendar be approved.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the citations on today's calendar? Hearing no objections, the citations stand approved. Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that we move back up the calendar to introduction of guests.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A, a friend, a constituent of mine from Kenai, she's a teacher at the elementary school in Kenai, Marla Huss.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Pinyalberry.
Mr. Speaker, I see we have an old friend of mine in Gallery B from the Delta area who is a longtime friend and advisor to Congressman Young, and is Frank Geiger from Delta.
Any further guests for introduction? We have completed the daily calendar. This brings us down to unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business to come before this body? Representative Clarkson.
I have a number of requests for excused absences, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Euling be excused Thursday, February 27th through plain time Monday, March 3. Representative Pinyalberry, Monday, February 24 until plain time Tuesday the 25th. Representative Martin on Monday, February 24th. Representative Cato be excused Friday, March 21st through and including Monday, March 24th. Representative Schultz be excused Wednesday, March 5th, through Sunday, March 9. I think that's all of them. Thank you.
Are there any objection to those people who are asking to be excused from the call of the House? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Under announcements, Representative Miller.
I give notice of reconsideration of my vote on HJR 16.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on said bill. Still under announcements, House Bill 99, an act relating to public assistance employment programs, will have an additional standing committee referral. So the referrals of that bill will be Hess, Judiciary, and Finance. Any further announcements? Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On Tuesday and Thursday, February 25th and 27th, the House Special Committee on Fisheries will be conducting hearings to review the status of fish and wildlife protection. This was motivated not only by a lot of issues that have been raised regarding the quality and effectiveness of our enforcement effort, but those were publicized in Alaska Magazine last summer, and the state suffered some criticism as a result. We've been working with the Department of Public Safety and believe it will be a cooperative effort and one that should lead to recommendations that will hopefully improve, if possible, our efforts in fish and wildlife protection. Memoranda have gone out to the members of the House and Senate Finance Subcommittees. to invite their participation and also to members of the House Resources Committee. If any member is interested in the Fish and Wildlife Protection matters and would like to either be kept informed in writing or be present at those hearings, they'll be 8:30 to 10 a.m. next Tuesday and Thursday, and all members are cordially invited to participate. Thank you.
Representative Navarre.
Mr. Speaker, could we have a brief at ease?
The House, please stand at ease. The House, please come back to order. We're still under standing committee and special committee announcements. Representative Clarkson.
I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker. I need to move and ask unanimous consent that I go up the calendar to unfinished business for purposes of another excused absence.
Any objections? Proceed, Representative.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Cotton be excused from the call of the House Monday, February, let's see, is that the 24th? 24th through plain time Tuesday the 25th.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, Representative Cotton is excused from the call of the House on those dates. Back under announcements of standing and special committees, Representative Miller.
Excuse me, just as a general announcement, if I may, I've been asked to announce that a number of Native groups and other interested groups are putting on a panel presentation on the 1991 issue at Northern Light Church. That'll be at 2 o'clock tomorrow. Members who are free, it should be very educational, particularly for people that are not too familiar with that situation.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Special Committee on Telecommunications will be having a work session today, and we'll discuss House Bill 539, which deals with lifeline rates. I would invite any of my colleagues who have an interest in this service to participate in today's meeting.
Any further announcements? Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, on Sunday, two members of this body have their birthdays. First of all, our leader, Representative Grusendorf, and also Representative Porchot on Sunday.
Any further announcements? This brings us down to special orders. Representative Szymanski.
Oh, beat me, didn't you? Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move. Let me request permission to speak on the subject of protecting the permanent fund.
Are there any objections?
Proceed. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know many of you have probably been watching the action on the other end of the hall with regard to legislation which I and other members of this body sponsored related to reinvesting and depositing the undistributed income account into the corpus of the fund. I'd like to report back to you with some information that I've received based on computer runs that were done on legislation that's been modified and changed, and let you reflect on it over the weekend, because I think many of your constituency that may be in contact with you are going to be asking you some of the similar questions that I received phone calls on yesterday. And that was, basically, what does it really mean to take the five-year averaging out of the current statute? What's the bottom line? Well, let me report back to you that the computer runout that I have in my hand tells me that the permanent fund will be short $2.3 billion in 2005 if we allow the five-year averaging be taken out. What do you gain in return for that? The projection for dividend distribution in 2005 is an increase of $17.2 million. Granted, during the period of time that we're going to have now and through 2005, there's going to be an escalation of dividends to a certain degree. But the significance of the change is that you're going to be raiding the heart of the permanent fund itself. You're going to be reducing the corpus of the fund by the year 2005, as I indicated earlier, by almost $2.3 billion. The exact figure is $2,277,000,000. I don't know how most of you feel about making trades, but the investment and return ratio on that one's not that hot when you stretch it all the way out to 2005. And quite frankly, I think that that's what we need to focus on. I just wanted to bring that to your attention today. Think about it. because, as I anticipate, we'll see some legislation coming back from the other body that we're going to have to deal with and make some tough decisions from a policy perspective. Thank you.
Representative Porcheau will be seeking the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Move and ask unanimous consent that I be given the special privilege of the floor to speak on the topic of glass houses and throwing stones.
Are there any objections? Proceed.
On Wednesday, the representative from Homer provided the body with information and costs on the introduction of legislative citations and urged this body and its members to limit this practice. As one who hasn't yet sponsored a citation, I agree that this practice has been apparently getting out of hand, and I would urge also the restraint in the area of introduction of citations. I'd also like to point out another similar area of legislative prerogative where more restraint seems to be warranted, and that's on the introduction of bills and resolutions. This legislature, over the course of this legislature, legislators have introduced 1,220 measures. There's no way in reality that most of these are going to be duly considered, let alone enacted. Obviously, a lot of these are just for pure political show. In the House, that would break down. 15 members have introduced less than 10. 14 members have introduced 11 to 20 measures. 10 members, totaling a total of 39, have introduced 21 to 37. And one member has introduced 75 measures. I've done some research on the costs of a typical bill or measure for research, drafting, and printing. There are no costs available for research, but for drafting, a typical three-page bill runs on the order of $100. For printing, that bill runs on the order of $90, for a total cost of a three-page bill without research, without reprinting, of $190. For those 75 bills introduced by one member of this body, that runs a total cost of $14,250. I repeat, Mr. Speaker, $14,250. Many of these bills may be well-intended, but I submit, Mr. Speaker, they may be ill-advised.
Representative Schultz.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to the privilege of the floor to speak on one community's loss and another community's gain.
Are there any objections? Okay. Proceed, Representative.
Mr. Speaker, as you know in reading in the paper that the race in Anchorage was canceled, and I was very happy to note that the race, at least many of the participants that were going to participate in the race in Anchorage, are now going to Tok, and Tok is gearing up, and the business community is very happy about it, and they're trying to go out of their way to make all the accommodations that they possibly can. Tok is excited about it, and we would like to have this become an annual event as part of the Fur Rendezvous. You can always depend on us to have perfect weather. We always have good snow conditions, and it's ideal for having a race. So we want to thank the people from Anchorage for them selecting Tok as the site to hold this race. The other thing I'd just like to comment on, I want to commend the representative from Anchorage for beating me to the introducing a person from my district. Yeah.
Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to bring up reconsideration of Senate Joint Resolution number 29 at this time.
Would the clerk at this time please read the title of that resolution?
Senate Joint Resolution number 29 by Ziegler, Eliason, and Ray, relating to maintenance of essential air service to Cordova, Yakutat, Petersburg, Wrangell, and Gustavus, Alaska.
The bill is before us in third reading. Is there any debate? Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In light of the discussion we just had about the cost of introducing bills and resolutions, I'd like to take it one step further. I would urge all the members of this body to vote no on this resolution, because just because one has been introduced doesn't mean and passed to us by the other body does not necessarily mean that there's any reason that we have to pass it. I submit to you that SJR 29 is no longer necessary. The subsidy that it addresses for 1986 for essential air service for these five communities is already in place. It's $1.9 million, and it's already in place. In 1978, Congress passed something called Essential Air Service because they were also deregulating the industry. Essential Air Service and the monies that we're asking Congress for provide adequate service to communities that were receiving air service before deregulation. These monies, since 1978, were to be used to serve until the markets could justify the removal of the subsidy and until those towns, villages, and cities had their own air service. The air carrier in question has received over $25 million in subsidies since 1978, and I submit to you that we are no closer today than we were then at having an air carrier that will stand alone to serve those communities. However, in the lower 48, there are a lot of new airline companies. There are also a lot of new aircraft that can provide the kind of efficient and economical air service that we're talking about. The United States Department of Transportation did an executive summary in telling Congress whether or not they supported the subsidy for this particular service. And if you will provide me the leeway, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to read from that. The air transportation needs of the five communities, both passengers and cargo, can be adequately met with service with 60 seats or smaller aircraft. There are no operational reasons that require the use of large jet aircraft in the subject market. Essential air service with 60-seat or smaller aircraft can be provided at the five communities without subsidy or with substantially less subsidy than is currently required for large jet operations. The air transportation system in Alaska is adequately prepared to provide this service with smaller aircraft. There would not be any adverse impact on the system or the reliability of service to the communities. Large aircraft service might continue, even without our requiring it, at some or all of these communities, as it has in other communities of comparable size in Alaska. First, for many, service with smaller aircraft affords greater operating flexibility for the carriers, providing the service enabling them to increase and decrease capacity in response to either the day of the week or seasonal variances in demand, as well as sudden short-term or smaller changes in market demand. Air carriers then can be more responsive to market conditions. Second, as a result of these operating efficiencies, the service could be more economical and require less subsidy. And finally, allowing service alternatives will result in more competition in the region and a stronger air transportation system. Our own favored DOTPUF has also said in a draft that the U.S. Department of Transportation has been directed by Congress to arrange air services with large aircraft to these five communities. But without this direction, according to DOTPUF, it is almost certain that an airline with smaller aircraft could operate the services to these points and they could do so less expensively. They go on to say, as long as the air services provided are subsidized by federal taxpayers or by anyone other than the users of the air service, the users will continue to demand a level of service that cannot be commercially justified. We're raising expectations here, Mr. Speaker, with a resolution that is no longer needed. We're raising expectations that I don't think we can justify. I also don't think that we can afford to keep those expectations raised. Why pass a resolution that we don't need when we should be urging the industry to find acceptable alternatives that are more effective, more efficient, and that may actually provide a better level of service to the people involved? I really would urge all of you to vote no on this resolution. Thank you.
Representative Sun.
Heaven at ease.
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we have this bill before us in third reading and debate. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, because of the number of people that are not on the floor, I move and ask unanimous consent that the reconsideration of HDR 29 be held over until Wednesday's calendar.
Are there any hearing objections? Representative Pierce? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall Senate Joint Resolution 29 be held over for Wednesday's calendar? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Representative Rieger. From yea to nay. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Thompson. From nay to yea. Does any other member wish to change? Would the clerk tally the board?
Yeas, 8 nays.
Senate Joint Resolution 29 will appear on Wednesday's calendar in third reading. Representative Taylor.
Are we back under special orders, Mr. Speaker?
Yes.
I'd ask the privilege of the floor to discuss an announcement, I guess, if I could. I'd like to announce the Alaska Federation of Business and Professional Women invites this body to a no-host luncheon at the Centennial Hall in Juneau, and that's today at noon. We get out of here at noon. I'd recommend all of you to go down and join them for lunch. Thank you.
Special orders. Representative Sun.
Speaker, I'd ask the privilege of the floor to speak on special orders of games that men play.
Any objections? Proceed, Representative.
Mr. Speaker, I would just like to report here. I thought it was somebody else's duty this year that the House basketball team is in fine form, and that many of you came out to watch it Wednesday night, but we did manage to take a game that had a relatively safe margin at the end and make it close, and we won the game with the Alaska Federation of Natives 92-90. And this was the outcoming of our coach from Kenai. He has now a 1-0 coaching record. And actually, the way it was put to me is that the representative from Fairbanks won, and the rest of us came along for the ride. But we had a great game, and I appreciate all of you for the support. And I would note there was a promotion in the game, and I did make some commitments not to say anything, but the majority leader was much improved this year over last year. And if I could spread that under the title I have, I would like to report that the representative from Eagle River sits two seats to my right, did win the amateur joke-telling contest at the penthouse last night.
Do we have any further special orders? Representative Maru.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request privilege of the floor to speak on reducing unemployment.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. After investigating the situation, it is my considered opinion that any increase in state employees' wages would essentially be at the expense of Alaska's unemployed workers. We can either invest this money, which is millions of dollars, in capital projects which will put our unemployed to work, or we can give pay raises to state employees who, for the most part, are already drawing comfortable salaries. Therefore, which way seems most fair? Although the most equitable use of this oil money would be equal distributions to all Alaskans, this probably will not occur. So the next best thing is to build capital projects, thus creating jobs in the private sector while constructing projects which benefit all Alaskans. Regarding the fairness of breaking a negotiated labor contract, let me point out that that contract was negotiated by the executive branch, and as I understand it, specifically states that it is subject to legislative appropriation. Thus, such is the chance that you take when working for state government. It is the duty, in fact, of the legislature to look out for the interests of all Alaskans, not just state employees.
Representative Navarre.
Mr. Speaker, I request the privilege of the floor to speak on basketball and make a correction.
Any objections? Hearing none, proceed, Representative.
The Representative Ketchikan said that the legislative basketball team is in fine shape, and I just wanted that to be amended so it read, most of the legislative basketball team is in fine shape.
Are there any objections to the correction to the statement? Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request unanimous consent to speak briefly on the genocide treaty.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A milestone occurred last Wednesday when the United States Senate passed the ratified the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. This bill, which outlaws mass killings,
was originally proposed to the United States 37 years ago by President Truman. It has failed every year since. And this year, finally, the United States Senate ratified that. I think it's important particularly to mention this today because of our passage of House Joint Resolution 60, the International Year of Peace. I think these go hand in hand, and I would like to commend the Senate, the U.S. Senate, for their ratification of the treaty and the vote of the Alaska delegation. We had, that is, the chairman of the Libertarian Caucus, the co-chair of the House Hess Committee, and I had introduced House Joint Resolution 56, urging the United States Senate to ratify this important treaty. I'm glad to see they did it and appreciate that. Thank you.
Still under special orders, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to privilege the floor to speak on resident hire.
Any objections? Hearing none, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll keep my comments very brief today. Since Monday, I've had a number of phone calls from all over the state, people calling from phone booths, calling from Anchorage, Fairbanks, all telling different versions of stories about their experience on the North Slope. And I've got some names of people that from different districts, and I'll be glad to share that with the people. But everyone that's called me has said that things like, you were 100% right, Alaskans are in the minority, and there's a lot of stories that are being told to me, and I'll be glad to. It seems like 4930 has become a hotline, and I'll be glad to share it with other members of the body. Thank you.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, if I may have the privilege of the floor to speak on the same subject on another point of view.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think we're all in line with this Alaska hire, and we know that as you put money out on the floor for capital capital projects, it's punishment when you have to work. Capital projects, that it employs all the people of the state. But one thing that came to my attention the other day, we were pleased to hear where our congressional delegation did attach to a congressional financial bill for military construction at Fort Wainwright, local hire provision. And a lot of us were probably really pleased with that, even though we know it has a constitutional question to it. What really disturbed me is 2 days ago, a person notified me about the agreement of that amendment. An agreement says, in short, that union workers from out of state hired under this provision will be considered Alaska residents. And this really upsets me because, number one, I think it's the first time in national history where Congress said who will be a resident of what state. And especially under this clause where we all thought that perhaps our union brothers would be first accepted for whatever jobs are available. But it's the union members now in state who have been fighting this issue for a long time, whether they be 302, whether they be the welders from Tulsa, Oklahoma, wherever they come from. They have always been subjugated to the seniority ranks of those in Seattle, Tulsa, Portland, wherever they came from. And now the major concern is that here they will, by congressional action, be considered a second, third, or fifth party down there in priority of jobs because the unions must go by seniority. And many of the members in Tulsa, many of the members in Seattle, in Portland, have more seniority than our Alaskan people. And I really think that the Labor and Commerce should look at that clause and see what problems we have, because if we're not allowed to hire Alaskan first under that, whether they're union or not, then we have allowed Congress to overrule our responsibility to our citizens. And I hope the Labor and Commerce looks under the intent agreement with that amendment. Thank you, sir.
Any further special orders? Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the House to adjourn until 11 a.m. Monday morning.
11 a.m. Monday.